J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Here's a little song I wrote about someone who hurt me real bad. My nose has been broke, my eyes have been poked, my ears have been twisted all around. My head has been punched, my face has been scrunched, I spent a lot of time on the ground. My mouth has been smacked, my teeth have been cracked, I've had to spit out a lot of grass. But nothing I say compares to the day when you kicked my heart's ass. My lip has been split to where I'm dribbling spit, and I thought for sure that I would die. I've coughed up blood while my face was in mud, with my spurs aiming up at the sky. Bottles have been broken off my head while I've been choking on a meal of broken glass. But nothing I say compares to the day when you kicked my heart's ass. No, nothing I say compares to the day when you kicked my heart's ass. Darling, I never walked away from a fight in my life. I always laid there, bleeding, gasping, and hoping that I would live to see you again. I've had guys the size of mountains hurt me so bad, I'm amazed I'm still alive. So tell me, how is it possible that a little sweet thing like you is capable of giving a heart such an ass whooping? My butt's been kicked as my head's been sticked in commodes from coast to coast. I've been kicked, punched, smacked, choked, face scrunched, ass poked, burned into cigarette toast. I've been beat so bad that the doctors had to put me in a full body cast. But nothing I say compares to the day when you kicked my heart's ass. No, nothing I say compares to the day when you kicked my heart's ass. How horrible it feels to be head over heels when you kicked my heart's ass. You kicked my heart's ass.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Here at JCOnTheLine.com, 237 days remaining in our American democratic system, as we have known. And how you doing, kids? A disgusting-looking morning in St. Louis. Sorry about that. Am I the only person that is a little bit surprised we're still talking about Bob Saget? You know, people loved him on his TV shows, and a very small number of people compared to what he was exposed to on national TV would go see his comedy act, and everybody just loved it because here you had this guy playing the all-American dad on the TV show, and then you go into the comedy club, and he is the filthiest person ever. And for some reason, that seemed to make the whole thing even more entertaining, and the guy's been dead for several months now. And they're still talking about the circumstances surrounding his death. They're still going. Well, now it turns out that, and this is apparently a very credible source, apparently he told a couple of people at the show in Orlando that night that he was not feeling well and that COVID was messing with his hearing, and he was getting over a sore throat and his ears were sort of plugged up. And the woman said she was very surprised because he went up on stage and just killed, no pun intended. He went up there and just really did a great show, so much so that I think it was the last tweet that Bob Saget made to somebody, just I think it was his wife or something, had said, oh my God, you know, we just had such a great show tonight. I'm really loving doing this again. Oh my God, I feel like I'm a kid again up on stage. This is great. But at the same time, he had told people, I'm not feeling that great. I got long COVID. And I'm having problems with my hearing. Now, here's the thing. If you've ever had anything like this, like vertigo, or when you get the flu, or just a terrible cold, and it just feels like your whole head is filled with wet toilet paper, you know the feeling, and it does mess with your equilibrium. And there is the smoking gun, if you will, because he obviously fell, hit something, ended up dead. And even though all of the toxicology reports come up zeros, there's no sign of foul play, no forced entry, no entry of any kind. I mean, they can, computerized keys and everything right now, they can tell whether the room door had even been open. There was nobody in there with them. So all these conspiracy theorists, I understand it's not your typical death, especially a celebrity death, but at the same time, there just isn't anything to back up the idea that, you know, he was attacked or something like that, or somebody hit him in the head, whatever the case may be. Whatever happened in that room with Bob Saget by himself. But I'm just still surprised we're talking about this, especially after the family got a ruling from a judge that basically sealed all of the remaining evidence, all the stuff that had not come out. So I don't even know how this ended up coming out, because apparently it's not part of the court documents or the official report or something like that. It's just some woman who is saying, well, you know, he did say this. He told me this. Remember how you felt when you came out of the movie The Godfather? You're scratching your head going, wow, did I just see maybe the best movie I'm ever going to see in my entire life? It all happened 50 years ago today, and there's a trailer out right now for a thing called The Offer. It's a Paramount Plus series about the making of the movie The Godfather, and I know a lot of people will flock to that. They're making another Marilyn Monroe movie. Netflix, as a matter of fact, it's their first original movie with an NC-17 rating. The movie is called Blonde. Now, if it's NC-17, it means it's pretty heavy-duty stuff in there. Fictional story about Marilyn Monroe with Ana de Armas as Marilyn and Adrian Brody as Arthur Miller, who is one of her husbands. He was a playwright in New York back in the day. There have been a lot of movies about Marilyn Monroe, and to be honest, that's another person I'm surprised we're still talking about. Marilyn Monroe. I guess all you have to do is die unexpectedly at an early age with some sort of a tinge of mystery surrounding the circumstances involving your death, and people will still be talking about you 50, 60, 70, who knows, 200 years later. If you wait around long enough and you survive life on this planet, eventually everything you knew as a young person will come back. How many times has Paisley come back? At least once. I'm waiting for my Nicole Miller ties to come back into vogue. Back in the 1990s, maybe you remember these things, these Nicole Miller ties. They were silk ties, and back then I had to wear a tie once in a while because I was on TV all the time. So I figured, well, if you're going to make me wear a tie, at least I'm going to wear something really, really cool. These things were $60 a piece, and I have about 20 of them in a bag in the garage. What's $60 times 20? Don't answer that question. I'm get sick to my stomach thinking about all the money I spent on Nicole Miller ties. By the way, I just lied to you. I don't have 20. I have about 40 of them. But as I was telling you the story, I'm, the little voice in the back of my head's like, don't tell me you got 40 of them, because you're going to sound bad enough knowing that. With everybody knowing that you got 20 of them. So don't tell the truth here. Don't say 40. Don't say 40. Say 20. But see, I can't lie. I can't lie. When I'm talking into a microphone on the radio, on the podcast, the internet, whatever it is, there is just something about my compulsion to be as honest as possible. And you can have the argument as to whether or not there are degrees of truth. You could pick that apart, and I wouldn't blame you, by the way. But anyhow, the reason I bring all this up about everything coming back from days gone by, tramp stamps are coming back, apparently. A blog post is going viral right now. They, of course, were the trendiest tattoo you could get in the late 90s and early 2000s, depending on who you were. The people started calling them tramp stamps. Wedding Crashers made fun of them. Saturday Night Live did sketches all the time. They ended up falling out of fashion. It was sort of like those Motorola earpieces. Jason Sudeikis used to wear one on Saturday Night Live when they would do that two a-hole sketch with Kristen Wiig. What kind of tree you want, babe? What? What kind of tree you want, babe?
What?
Who is that guy, by the way? Come on, that's got to be somebody. You're doing that too well.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's no one specific. Like, Chris and I literally, like, started chewing gum late one night when writing a sketch, like, sitting there at the keyboard at 5 in the morning on a Tuesday night, and we just started chewing gum to stay awake, and then I think it's, like, just sort of based on those turkeys you see out in the world that just have no manners and think the world revolves around them. And
well, I just want to thank you for throw out a $100 Bluetooth. Right. Because I can't wear the damn thing, because when I wear it, I look like that character on SNL.
Bluetooth, they must hate us. Everybody at Motorola, the stock went down immediately.
By the way, I think I mentioned this a couple of days ago. I watched Ted Lasso for the first time over the weekend. I just, you know, all these awards. I got like 20 nominations last time out, and I don't know what I was doing. I wasn't even 100% sure I had Apple TV Plus. I can't keep track of the apps I have and the ones that I don't have and the ones that automatically renew and the ones that ran out after, you know, the 2-week trial or whatever it is. So I'm like, do I even have this thing? And I found it. It was like, and the thing just started playing. So I figured, okay, I'm going to watch some of this. I want to know what all this is about. Everything I've heard about Ted Lasso up until now just didn't sound like something that would interest me for some reason. But then I, like, you know, you're watching all these awards and people talking about it. And it's like, I should be watching this. Hooked immediately. In the first 2 minutes, I'm like, okay, now I get it. Now I get it. This really, really is done well. And so I'm about halfway through, I think it's episode 4 right now for the first season, and I'm looking forward. I have to get my taxes done. I haven't even started. After I get my taxes done, that's going to be something I'm going to be doing. Oh, and by the way, I will not have the announcement that I've been teasing here for a couple of days until next week, and there's just nothing special about why that is, but it'll be next week, where I will tell you something I think you will enjoy. This is the anniversary of one of the best stories I have about being in St. Louis as the new kid. And I'm going to leave some of the names out here because, well, the reasons for that will become obvious here in just a moment as I start telling the story. So the year is 1985. I've been in town a little over a year. And the boss at the radio station, it was like a Saturday afternoon, had like one of these open house type parties. Just come as you are, wander in, wander out, no biggie, whatever. Now I just had two relationships end. My first girlfriend in St. Louis was from Cahokia, Illinois, a beautiful red-haired, freckled, well-chested young woman, and I screwed that up. And then on the day that she broke up with me officially, I just happened to meet somebody who had just broken up with her boyfriend, and so we started dating. And after about 2 months, and this girl was beautiful. Oh my God, she was smart and she was funny. And I was like, oh, this is great. One day, the ex-boyfriend shows up with 2 dozen roses and an engagement ring, and she dropped like a sack of potatoes. So that was the end of that. So I'm just sort of walking around, and I'm sort of depressed, to be honest. And one of the saleswomen at the radio station said, I think I might have a girl for you. And so Jane sets up this lunch date with her, me, and this young woman who is 22 years old, cute as a button. And the lunch went very, very well. And I said, hey, look, the boss is having this open house thing on Saturday late afternoon, like 4 o'clock or something like that. Would you like to go to this thing with me? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'm like, oh, this is great. This girl's really cute, smart, funny, the whole thing. Now, keep in mind, I don't really know this girl very well. So I take her to the party, and she's having fun. She's really having fun. She's having so much fun, she's not keeping track of her drinking. And you're at that moment where you're thinking to yourself, we could be getting into a problem area here. Did I mention that this young woman still lived at home with her parents and that her father was an ex-Marine? When I picked her up at the house, I didn't get the idea that he was too crazy about me. I just, you know, my hair was really, really bushed out then, and my wardrobe wasn't that great. And so I'm sure he's thinking to himself, oh God, this is the best you can do, honey. So anyhow, go to this party. We're having a good time. She's having a very, very good time. And I finally, it took me like 2 hours to get her out of there. But I drag her out of the place by her ankles. I get her in the car and I start heading for our part of town out of South County.
I don't want to go home. I don't want to go home. Let's go to your place. Let's go to your place.
This is the first real date. Okay. I don't count the lunch as the date. That was like an introductory three-person meeting to see whether or not there was a spark there, you know? Okay. So this is really our first date. Barely know this girl. Now, it's a Saturday night, she's drunk, and she wants to go to my place. Mama didn't raise no fool. Now, I don't believe in having sex on the first date. I never have. I just think it's a bad idea. So it's not like I was going to take advantage of this girl at all. It never even crossed my mind. Especially if it's somebody you like, and you think, well, maybe there's an actual relationship here. You don't want to goof it up by doing something stupid and having sex on the first day. I just think that's a dumb idea. So we're laying on the couch watching TV, and several times I say to her, well, I should probably get you home. No, no, no. And when I would say that, she would just nuzzle in even more. She had her face like buried in my neck. I happen to like female faces buried in my neck, by the way. Did I mention that? And so, you know, when another show ends, it's like 11 o'clock at night. Leslie, come on, I should take you home. She said, no. Here comes her face right back into my neck again. And all I'm thinking to myself is, don't fall asleep here. Don't fall asleep. Well, guess what happened? 6:50 a.m., I get a call from that saleswoman who set us up. She's like, Leslie's father called me. Leslie never came home last night. What do you know about this? And I look at the clock. I'm in a stupor, okay? I look at the clock. It's not even 7 a.m. on Sunday morning. And I'm like, she's with me. I'll get her home right away. Leslie wakes up on the couch and doesn't remember anything and just keeps going, oh, my God, I'm in so much trouble. Oh, my God, oh, my God. Again, keep in mind, 22, fresh out of college, living at home with the ex-Marine, who I know is not going to be interested in my altruistic story about how I tried to wake her up several times and take her home throughout the course of the evening, and then eventually I fell asleep. We wake up from the phone call at 10 minutes to 7 on Sunday morning. I'm telling you, I'm a victim of circumstance. We got in the car. She won't even make eye contact with me. And I think that I pulled up about two blocks away from her house, slowed the car down to about 15 miles an hour, and just basically pushed her out. And then I hit the gas. The kicker to the story is she became a very, very influential and somewhat famous publisher in the St. Louis area a couple of years later. And there's my first date story that goes all the way back to 1985. Look at this cluster. They are showing at 70 in the McKinley Bridge westbound. Let me just get some sound.
Or if you can, get onto the interstate anywhere to the north or to the west of Grand. And I'm also monitoring a situation 64 westbound right at Highway Inn in the Lake St. Louis area. MoDOT just moved their cameras, but it does appear that there is a crash again, 64 westbound near Highway Inn.
This is just one of those ones. For those of you listening, I know a lot of people don't listen until the evening or something like that. It's a podcast, not a live radio show. So I hesitate to talk about things that are happening in the moment, but this is a shitty morning, guy. And now here's Molly. Here.
You can see traffic is light in that direction. 55 out of Jefferson County.
Everything is a mess here. Everything is a mess here today. All right. And there's Molly on Fox 2 again with a beautiful dress on. She must come from money. They don't pay these reporters much money at all. And she has one of the best wardrobes I've seen a woman wear on TV in quite some time. She does a great job, and she just looks great. You know, in the morning, everybody wants to, you know, point to Laura Hediger, who's an idiot, but she's got a great figure, and she dresses, you know, pretty cool. But I'm telling you, Molly Rose on Fox 2, that's the one you should be watching. And by the way, speaking of that sex on the first date part of that story, you know, you always think of Hollywood as people just running around boinking everything that moves. And while that is true, there are exceptions to the rule. Jessica Simpson and Nick Lachey, she was a virgin when they got married, allegedly. Same thing with Justin Bieber, Haley Baldwin. Tina Fey is the interesting one. Tina Fey said she couldn't give it away. And if you saw pictures of Tina Fey when she was younger, That's understandable. I think she looks great now, but boy, this was the, you hate to use a term like ugly duckling, but I mean, she would be the one to use that and has. Tim Tebow, you know, the whole God thing. Ciara and Russell Wilson. There's some sort of religious stuff going on there. And the amazing one was Lisa Kudrow. Lisa Kudrow from Friends. She was something like 33 when she lost her virginity, which I just think is stupid. That's ridiculous. Sex is a part of life. It's one of the most natural things that we do. Learning to have strong, healthy sexual relationships and a healthy sexual identity is part of the maturation process. And if you are waiting until you're in your 30s for that, I'm sorry, that's goofy. Speaking of attractive women, I was just a moment ago. Today we got the series premiere of Halo. This is on Paramount Plus. And the only reason I bring it up is because Natasha McElhone is in it. She plays a doctor in this whole thing. She was on Californication with David Duchovny. She played the ex-wife, and I think she is one of the most beautiful women that has ever walked the planet. Natasha McElhone. I may have to check this out tonight. Late Night Tonight, Ethan Hawke. I'm with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel's got Gwen Stefani. Already told you about the offer on Paramount Plus about the making of The Godfather. Oh, by the way, John Bon Jovi approves of the people of Ukraine using It's My Life as a rallying cry. They've been pumping that through speakers, and he's fine with it. Birthdays today, one of the most talented women and very, again, a look that is generally an acquired taste. Redheads just seem to be like that. Redhead women, they are either just knockouts or it's a really sad outcome. Jessica Chastain, 45 today. Peyton Manning, 46. Allison Hannigan, 48. Jim Parsons from Big Bang, 49. Laura Flynn Boyle from Twin Peaks. And she was boinking Jack Nicholson for a while. She's 52. Kelly LeBrock, and that's another one of those people like Yasmine Bleeth, arguably two of the most beautiful women God has ever graced us with, and just let herself go. You wouldn't even recognize her anymore. That should be against the law. She's 62 today. Nana, or Nina, however you prefer, 99 Luftballons, 62. Tommy Hilfiger, 71. And Louis Anderson would have been 69 today.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
Comedian Louis Anderson.
Did you ever get that pothole next to your house filled in? Louis used to talk about this. There was like a pothole, and the city of L.A. wouldn't do anything. And you were actually going to go out there with a sack of, like, sack crete once yourself, trying to take a nap or something. A car would go by. It would hit this pothole. It would shake the whole neighborhood.
The guys were working on a house roof down the street using tar, and I got them to mix up some stuff and fill that in for me for $100.
For $100?
Yeah. It went on for years. Boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. And I would just go, I'm going to fix that thing. And finally I did. And then I sold the house.
Some of you who go all the way back to the 90s with us, and I think this was on the river back around maybe 94, 95, somewhere in there, worked at that station for a couple of years. Actually, when we started, it was the Fox. And then all of a sudden, one day they came in and said, starting tomorrow, we're the river. I'm like, huh? Had insane people running that place. Oh, God. I could do 10 podcasts just on the 2 years I spent at the Fox, which turned into the river. That one alone, including the fact that Sarah and Mary Ellen, it was Mary Ellen Owens and Sarah Clark, I believe her name was. Again, two smart, attractive, relatively young women. They were doing mornings at The Point, which was in the studio right on the other side of the wall from us. You may remember the print ads that they were running in the Riverfront Times and stuff that said, mornings are a bitch. And then they had those pictures of the two of them. That was like a big, big deal back in the 90s. And they had a very popular show. But in addition to their studio being right next to us, then after the show, we had to go down some stairs. And then they had these glassed in little offices. And their office was also right next to us down there. And these two would get off the air. And I am telling you, the screaming would ensue. We would just sit there and stop our conversations and listen. And when I talk about arguments and yelling and screaming between two women, I'm talking about the kind of stuff that you say in an argument when you know you are never planning to speak to this person again? You know, because there are arguments where it's like, well, you do this and you do this and blah, blah, blah. But then there's those other arguments. You know what I'm talking about? Where things are said that are just irretrievable. You can't get them back. They're devastating. And you think to yourself, well, one or both of them is going to be seen carrying their stuff out to the car in a box in the next half hour or so. And they would do this on a regular basis. And the next day they'd come in and they'd be fine. But man, did these two argue with one another. Screaming matches after the show. But it was right about that time that I had heard about this doctor in St. Louis who specialized in breast augmentations. It's like, we should look this guy up and have him on the show. I want to hear all about this. And again, it was the 90s, and there was a lot of that going on. And this was before the whole, I think it was the silicone breast implants, when they started to realize that maybe the silicone stuff wasn't good for you. So this was before all of that. And as you called him up, and he was actually, we had a mutual friend. I had another doctor friend who worked in the same building with him. He was like, oh, yeah, sure, he'll come on. His name is Dr. Alan Londe, L-O-N-D-E. You may have seen a woman during that time period wearing a red tank top that said BBL, Boobs by Londe. After they did the procedure and sent you home with your brand new boobs, they would give you that tank top, and women would wear that tank top proudly. Some people get plastic surgery and they don't want you to realize that you had something done. And then there are other people, especially the boob job ones. You know, it's like, look, I paid $6,000 for these things. They're going to be out. You're going to see them. And I was shocked to learn during the interview, and he was the nicest guy in the world, Dr. Alan Londe. He couldn't have been nicer. And he, you know, answered all of our stupid questions. You know, here's a guy who was a specialist in like thoracic surgery, you know, esophageal cancer and livers and things like that, all that, you know, stuff that inside your body, all that gooey stuff people don't want to talk about. But in 1969, he's in Vietnam, and the general comes to him and says, I hear you're a very talented surgeon. My daughter has read about this breast augmentation thing, and do you know anything about it? And I guess he said, yeah, actually, I think so. And he's like, well, could you do that? He's like, oh, yeah, I could probably do that. So in 1969, he did his first breast augmentation on the general's daughter in Vietnam. He comes back home, opens up the practice in Creve Coeur. Again, thinks he's going to be working on throats and larynxes and stuff like that. And instead, he starts doing boob jobs. Now, I want you to just let this sink in for a moment when I say it. This was 1995, okay? It is almost 30 years ago. But in 1995, he had already done 22,000 breast augmentations. 22,000! People came from all over the country, certainly all over the Midwest and all over the St. Louis region. He was like the go-to guy. And I have mixed emotions about breast implants, you know, and it's one of those things where, frankly, my opinion shouldn't even matter. Don't you just love it when old white guys like me want to pass judgment on a woman who doesn't have the same situations that men do? I've known women who have gotten breast augmentations that will tell you stories, and their eyes almost well up with tears when they talk about how badly they have been teased their entire lives. You know, even in some cases by their own fathers. Their own fathers making fun of them because they didn't have any boobs. How difficult it is to buy and wear clothes. You know, women have to buy one swimsuit top and a different swimsuit bottom because the two don't go together. But again, that's what we do in this country. If you have something that's either really, really big or really, really small, we make fun of it. That's the way of the world. I'm happy to say that I was on the receiving end, shall we say, of some of the good doctor's work. And normally I can spot them a mile away. Did you ever take that test? I think if you Google it, there's a test you can take where they show you 20 pairs of breasts. And what you do is you sit there and you have to tell whether or not they're fake or they're real. I got 19 out of 20. I can spot these things, okay? But I was fooled once. She was in my bathroom brushing her hair after the, shall we say, the big event. And I walked into the bathroom where the lights were very, very bright. And I sort of took a look and it's like, wait a minute. So he did such a good job on that particular woman that I was fooled. And I had just had sex with her. That's good work. That's damn good work. Dr. Londi went to Washington University, served on the board of many charitable organizations, and by everybody's account, was one of the greatest guys ever in St. Louis. Another doctor friend of mine said, I knew him for 40 years, and I never saw the guy in a bad mood. He was always in a good mood. If you can imagine what Chevy Chase's father must have looked like, that's what Dr. Londi looked like. Looked like Chevy Chase's dad. And he was a blast. I wish that I could find the segment we did with him on the air back in the 90s, but that is somewhere deep, deep, deep in the archives. I haven't been able to locate it. But I tell you this whole story because Dr. Londi passed away a couple of days ago. I think it was either Saturday or Sunday at the age of 86. He'd been retired for the last couple of years, spent a little time down in Florida, traveling the world and stuff like that. But we have lost a real talent. First of all, a very talented guy, a terrific surgeon with an interesting backstory, and a great guy involved in so much charitable work, Dr. Alan Londi. Pretty cool guy.
I love baseball and boxing, messing around with tools, six packs and wrestling and smoking a pack of cools. I love watching Steve McQueen, movies on the Late Late Show, and push-ups and jumping jacks. Don't you know what I really, really love more than anything? Our boobies, boobies, boobies in the morning, boobies in the spring, boobies in my face, boobies are everything, boobies.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Thursday, March 24th, 2022, 237 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. The podcast is in the can today. We're in the top 10 of all podcasts in the country, and that's because you guys have spread the word. Please continue to do that. Let them know we're here. Sorry, the announcement that I was planning to share with you this week is probably going to be delayed until next week. But as soon as I know something, I will tell you about it. Anyhow, we're here. In the meantime, every Monday through Friday, absolutely free, right about 7 o'clock. We archive everything. So if you miss a podcast, pick it up later. Email me, JC at jcontheline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with JC Corcoran. We do politics here only when it is absolutely unavoidable, and we managed to avoid it all day here today. The last 30 minutes were politics free. Congratulations, JC. Well, thank you very much. And now back to you. Have a great day. Stay warm, stay dry. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.